CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday morning. CliffCentral.com, the 14th of September. You with me and Lebung and Bulelo. And we've got lots to talk about this morning. I just want to quickly remind you, we've got a really cool interview coming up with the First Lady of South Africa. That's right. She is the First Lady. She's married to the President, but she's also a patron of the Early Care Foundation. She's the patron of the Early Care Foundation. And she's an incredible woman. She doesn't do a lot of interviews. I don't know that I've ever seen her doing any other interviews. But tomorrow at 8 a.m., you will be able to hear our discussion. And she, in the interview, she shares her thoughts and her passion about the importance of the Early Care Foundation and what they do for kids in South Africa. There'll also be a video on YouTube and a podcast available for you to check out as well. So all of that's coming up tomorrow. Lebung was there too. That was the famous person we should have got a picture of you with, right? And we didn't.
Yes, but we slept on the game. But either way, I was just happy to be in her presence. Yeah. She is actually just a human being. To be honest, you're downplaying it, Gareth. It's an exclusive. It's an exclusive interview with the First Lady. Yes, South Africa, we have a First Lady. And she actually spoke to us. So you definitely want to be here tomorrow at 8 o'clock. I'm going to tune in. Even though I was there, I just want to rewatch it because it was so dope. Like, she's a person. She doesn't take herself, you know, in that high regard as you would assume she would. Yeah. She literally is so relatable. She is just, you know, when you talk to her, you're like, yeah, this is a South African. Yeah. This is a person. You know, you don't feel like you're speaking to somebody who is way high above you. And I love that about her. And she's genuinely passionate about kids and, as you said, the early development and how kids grow in their early years. And it just comes out naturally and organically. She's not putting on a front. She's not acting like something she isn't. So I'm very, very happy that I met her. I am literally hoping that I can see her again soon so I can get that picture. But I'm keen to relive that experience.
Well, I mean, the work that this Early Care Foundation does is really important. And if you can get involved or you can help, we'll tell you how to do that too in the interview. But what they do is, apart from take kids out of, you know, houses where the parents, for example, have both got to work, or they're the child-headed household and there's no one to look after these kids. And that's a big problem in South Africa. Takes them out of those environments and puts them in an environment where they can be looked after, they can be supervised, they can learn, they can play, they can develop their little brains and get things going really early, because we know how important that stuff is. If you don't have that as a child in your early first 1,000 days, then you're going to be a mess later on. There's no way you can catch up on that time. Plus, they help these kids because they give them food. And, you know, for a lot of them, malnutrition is a real problem.
You know,
so many.
They also train the teachers as well. So it's a whole like 360 thing. On one aspect, Gareth, is the actual child and the things that the child isn't necessarily getting directly from within the household. And then on the other end of the Early Care Foundation, they look after the teachers that are in charge of these kids. So I like that it's this nice 360 process. My favorite thing is that anybody can get involved. Anybody can assist. You don't need to physically be there yourself training these kids or whatever. You can just put in your bit because it's such an important time for children to grow. So I'm keen. I think it's really, really dope. It's
Let
a dope initiative.
If I could have it my way, all of those social grants would be going to children and not to anyone else.
Facts.
Because, you know, if you're a grown adult and you can't find a way to make yourself useful in society, that's on you. But a little child, that's totally not on them. You can't hold them responsible. And they should be the ones who get that small grant to be able to just have someone look after them, to get one good meal a day, make sure that they're in a safe environment where they're not going to be predated upon by all these crazy adults. And they can learn, they can develop, they can become the next generation of people who will save this country. That's important.
No doubt.
All right. So a couple of things to get into this morning. There's rather a lot on the agenda. So Lebung's going to explain why she wants to talk about this, because this is a hell of a thing. Parental favoritism. It's something you brought up on your show the other day, Life with Lebung, which, by the way, is on a Thursday morning at 11. And you didn't get a good reaction from your mother about this parental favoritism. So just explain what happened.
So obviously I've been doing radio for a couple of years, and when I was still at YFM a few years ago, like, my mom would always be like, yeah, we definitely listen to your show, we support you, and you're not gonna really go back and check. You can't even check if they really did or not, so you just kind of keep it moving. So when I started Life with Lebang at Cliff Central, like, now it's a podcast, and now it's like she'll say to me, where's the link, blah 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 blah. Oh. So I know she's definitely listening. Mm. And I did an episode about parental favoritism, because I grew up, you know, in a household with two brothers, and I was sandwiched in between the two of them. And I was very honest in that podcast about my experience. I was very honest about some of the facts around parental favoritism. And how I knew that my mom actually listened was, like, 2 days after it went live, she just sends me a message. She's like, hey, so parental favoritism, I listened to your show. I was like, ah, shit. Uh-oh. So she goes, I didn't know you felt that way. But anyway, it was interesting. I was like,
but hang on.
Oh, mom, you know, hang on, hang I love on, you. Blah, blah, blah.
Just back it up for a second. Did you say in the recording, did you say during your show that one of your brothers was her favorite, or that both of your brothers were her favorite, and that you didn't feel looked after and cared for enough? Is that what happened?
Not in so many words. I mean, you know, guys, I don't script, you know, my shows. I say what's in my heart, and it just sort of comes out like that. So I had to go back and re-listen. I just kind of summed it up nicely and said, look, I know that I wasn't the favorite. I know that I'm still not the favorite. And, mm-hmm. you know, statistically, as a parent, once you've got a favorite child, that child is always going to be your favorite. And I had to be honest, you know, because...
Why are you not the favorite? Well, what did you do for your parents not to like you as much as your brothers?
It's not that my parents don't like me. They dig me. I'm cool. It's just that, you know, my mother has this bond with my brothers that I can't take away from her. And it's cool. Like, I specifically said it's cool. Like, I'm not touched. I let it go. I've made peace with it. She... clearly is touched, because she's claiming she didn't know that I felt that way. And I'm like, well, you kind of
So no parent wants to be accused of having a favorite, because parents,
absolutely.
In their own heads, every parent has this perfect objectivity. They're like, oh, no, all my kids are different and I love them all. But they're like, if you catch a parent in a very honest place, if you're talking... Maybe even if they're a bit drunk, like this happened with a friend of mine the other day. I asked her, like, come on, do you think it's possible for parents to have a favorite child? And then they admit it. They go, yeah, totally. Totally, that is absolutely the thing. Now.
Yeah, it's quite a thing. So on one end, I'm now a parent. I've got four. I know I don't want to choose a favorite. You know, the show, I specifically say I try to give them all equal love, but not like break it down. I give them all 100%. I don't give them like 25, 25, 25, 25. And then, you know, at the same time, I said to my mom when I saw her afterwards, was there's no such thing as a perfect parent. It's okay. You can't always get everything right as a parent. I'm not expecting you to. Just know that this was my experience. But she kind of just denied the whole thing. She's like, no, I treat you all equally. I love you all the same. Like, it's okay, dude. You're not going to always get it right. I still love you, and you still love me, and that's what counts. So it's just trying to get my mom to realize that, you know, she'll never be the perfect parent, and there's no such thing. And she just needs to accept that. She's in denial completely. She still 100% believes that she gave us all the same attention and same affection and blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, it's definitely not the case. But it's an ongoing topic on Life with Lebang. So on the first part, I spoke about growing up in a household where I definitely wasn't the favorite. And in the second part, I'm just going to unpack, you know, what it's like having so many kids and being in that situation where it's like, oh, but this child is like, right. Oh my word. And
hold on.
What did you do? I you keep saying you're not the favorite. So I just quickly want to tell you before you answer, or maybe you don't want to answer, which is also fine. So in my household, it's so strange to me. Like, my parents are, if there's one thing in my household I grew up in, is clear communication from very early. So my mother always said this, and she said it to my sister face to face, is I love both of you equally. But my son, it means he's the first one. So I love you equally, but not the same. So that's what my mother always said. My father was always very clear. My sister's the favorite because my sister is. So my father's thing was always, you don't thank me with your words. My father always said, if I give you an opportunity, take advantage of the opportunity. I'm not interested in you saying thank you and doing a big parade in front of him. He doesn't do that.
Yeah.
If I give you an opportunity, take care of it. So in my 20s, when I was delinquent, my father was very clear. you're out. Sorry. And I'm cool with that. I kind of like that. Whereas my mom was always clear. I love both of you equally, not the same. So for me, I know what I did in order, order for my dad. What did you do? Because you did something. You were, you must have been somewhere, somehow.
Look, I don't think there's anything specific I did. And I like what you said, that your parents told you. So from the onset, you knew what you were getting yourself into. My issue was that my mom believes that she's doing everything equally, when really that's not the case. So it's not what I did or didn't do. It's that denial that, no, but I'm definitely all of them, same treatment, same punishment, same everything. Whereas, come on, dude, the proof is definitely in the pot of soup. We are not getting the same treatment. So that's kind of where I drew that from.
But were you a shithead? Because I was a shithead.
Oh, definitely.
So I'm very clear. Oh, so you were a shithead.
Okay. I was a shithead, but I wasn't the shittiest. There's that shit that you can, you know, you can just be like, okay, that's some shit. Then there's like, woo, but that's some shit though. I was like the, oh, that's some shit.
Yeah, but also, I mean, so you're the only girl, right? So maybe there was a little bit of softness, and it might even have seemed like favoritism. So in my family, it's also two boys and a girl. So my sister, I think she's my dad's favorite, and that would be fine with me. And I think my brother, the middle one, is my mom's favorite, and that's also fine with me. I promise you, I don't bear any grudge. I tease them about it the whole time. Of course, they deny it, but I think you know what? Having been the eldest, I also got all the love right at the start. I had lots of grandparents around when I was little, so I don't feel any lack of love. But I do think it's hilarious.
Who's the richest in your family, Gareth, of you kids? Because that also works.
That plays a factor.
It plays, and we must stop pussyfooting around it. Whoever is the most successful and can make your parents' life soft, and rightfully so.
I think my brother.
Sorry, man, Gareth.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Gareth. Yeah. No,
but you must also understand, like, there are a whole lot of things that come into this. For example, my brother and my mom's personalities are very similar as well. Whereas my dad and my sister and I are very different. You know, we've got more of the similar personality. And then there are even family resemblances. Like, my mom's side of the family has come through quite strongly in my brother, whereas with my sister and I, it's clear that we are our father's children, you know. And I think all of that is really, it's just, even though I like to tease about it, it's not important, and it certainly doesn't keep me up at night, and everybody feels equally loved. And my parents always did give us exactly the same amount of love and attention and care and all the rest of it. And my mother gets really angry when I talk about my brother being her favorite, but I kind of think that she gets angry because it's maybe true. Anyway, I love the fact that in families you have these dynamics. I mean, listen to dude.
It's different personalities.
Listen to dude 69. He says, my mom used to wait till the other five weren't around. Then she would say that I was her favorite. But I knew she would say it to all the other five when I wasn't around.
Yep. Moms be like that. They be like that.
I thought I wasn't my mom's favorite, said Thurrence, until she passed away, and then I found out I was. Oh, wow. How did you find that out? That's interesting.
Found that out. Yeah. Do you think she left a letter?
Don't know.
Oh, my God. Imagine if you know how when people pass, you're all emotional, and if Thurrence has maybe two or three brothers or sisters, imagine reading that letter with them. Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, now you can't even...
you don't want that.
Wow.
Carl says, I was a model son my whole life, head boy, etc. My little brother was a shit, and now he's the favorite. Explain that one.
Thank you. Exactly. Like, all of a sudden, like, man of the hour, you've been crappy, man.
It must be so hard, though. Lebang, you've got four kids. How do you keep it equal? Because sometimes sometimes one of them is going through that tricky stage. Like, you know, between two and three, kids are impossible. And then when they hit their teenage years, they become impossible again. And I mean, those are very general categories. But sometimes also, maybe one of the kids is having a tougher time at school, not enjoying it so much. So they're being very tricky and they're giving you extra admin. And so that kid kind of slips down the rungs for a few days. How do you keep it even?
Look, I'll tell you off the bat, number one, like, kids are generally not the same. They all have, I live with four different personalities in tiny human form, number one. Number two, days are generally not the same. There's days when I wake up and I'm like, oh, I love you, child number two, you're doing God's work, blah, blah, blah. And then there's days when I'm like, yo, child number two, what are you doing to me right now? And Honestly, I'm still figuring it out. I'll be honest. It's probably like an ongoing thing. But as far as I can tell right now in my journey of how not to have a favorite child is that days aren't the same. When the child needs you in that moment, if they are struggling with something, just stop everything and just be there for that child. What's difficult is when more than one needs me in that exact moment. So, for example, last night, my two-year-old, who's going through like the terrible two phase, is screaming in this ear because I'm holding my eight-month-old here on this side. So my two-year-old wants me to also pick her up. And then my seven-year-old walks in because he just got back from school and he's in tears because somebody bullied him. That's when I stop and I'm like, yo, all that sex was it really worth? You know, that's when I'm like, okay, this is a lot. But it's in those moments where I just need to figure it out and kind of just hone things in and not just be like, okay, you stop and then just give this one a take. I just have to find a way to make everybody feel okay. And as I said, it's ongoing. I won't lie. There's days when I'm like, ooh, that one, woo-wee, that's my baby. And then there's days when I'm like, oh my word, that same one that was my baby yesterday is now just making me want to, you know, like really hurt myself. So days aren't the same. At the end of it all, it's all just a beautiful thing to watch because it's a part of life, you know?
Is there a way for us to imbibe in children that we don't have to like you? Like parents don't have
you. No, you have to tell kids you like them. No, you can't tell.
Is that the whole thing?
Yeah, it's like that's rejection. You tell a child of three or four that and it'll stick with them for the rest of their lives. You're causing major psychological problems for them. Now, they have to know their parents love them. They have to know that. Otherwise, they have no... There's no safe place for them in their
whole
world. Yeah.
But if your parents don't like you, who the hell's going to like you?
Yeah, you maniac.
But I'm saying this at 35, is I can understand my father's frustration with me in hindsight.
Yeah,
like when I look at my... But if he is what I'm saying.
If,
like,
if he'd said to you, "I hate you," at like age 16 when you were behaving,
I didn't say that. I didn't say it.
You wouldn't be here right now on the show talking to us if your dad said that to you.
I didn't say parents must go and say you're the worst thing that's ever happened to me. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying just as society, can we imbibe in children that you're not special?
No.
Or do we need to just keep going in that direction?
No, dude. Bulelo, that's for much later. I mean, you want to counterbalance. Look, in the beginning, all that a kid needs when it's very little is love. And again, I'm saying this as a non-parent, so you correct me where I'm wrong, Lebang. All you need to give them is love. Make them feel like they belong in that family, like they're special to you as a parent, that you'll do anything for them. And then later on in life, you start to explain to them, actually, there's a whole bunch of shit you need to do for yourself. Actually, having my approval on every single thing isn't the most important thing.
It's not important. But finding a balance is what's key. So in as much as within the household, it's love lives here, everything you do is great, blah, blah, blah. You have to be honest with your child. You have to tell them that, look, outside of the world that you know in this house is the real world. People are going to be mean. Yeah. People are going to be ugly. People are going to be nasty.
Yes.
You have to sort of raise them to have those expectations of not everybody is your parent. Not everybody's going to just shower you with love. Some people aren't going to like you. Some people aren't going to understand why you have a rash and they're going to make fun of you. But just learn to deal with that. And then when they're older, when they're 35 or whatever the case is, you can tell them straight up that, you know, you were actually a little shit, but you're an adult. Yeah. We can laugh it off. I still ultimately love you. I may have not liked you, but I still loved you. That's the difference. Just finding that balance. But when they're a kid, it has to be all love, bro.
So I tell you what, my mom's coming to Joburg tragically in the next 2 weeks or so. And she did a second PhD, so a second doctorate in early childhood development. So I'll see if I can get in the studio and we can
please
kind
do
of
it. Please do it.
Please.
I would love to have that. That would
please.
Be amazing.
She's not keen, but we'll push for it.
I have questions for her.
Johan says, Mom used to tell us, I will always love you, but today, because of your behavior, I don't like you. Obviously, we were old enough to understand the difference. That's great. I think that makes a lot of sense. Jean says, Bulelo is going to be a very interesting parent one day.
Hey,
I think I'll be too soft. I've kind of already seen what I'm like with my very, very young nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
I'm extremely. Yeah, because as I'm getting older, I realize, like a lot of people think I don't realize that I'm unreasonable on people, right? Because I'm extremely demanding on adults. But with children, I'm way the other way. I think it'll be a complete forgiving nightmare. I'll probably have like your, they'll probably work at an NGO and be, have colorful hair in a book, you know, by 21. They'll be those kids.
Corona's boring says, so. Bulelo, however, I wouldn't hold it against your dad if he said those things that you said. That's about right.
He's a straight talker. Well, he doesn't, if they've, he is, of all the humans I've ever met, and I've met some serious straight talkers, my dad doesn't mince his words, but he is, if anything, honest. You're never getting a lie from him.
Tipsivity says, my mom used to pray out loud in front of us kids, Lord, give me patience, not strength, because I will donor these kids dead.
Okay. It gets real sometimes.
Raising a teenager is tough, says MB. To get them to be self-reliant in a time where everything is instant and on demand in so many aspects of their lives. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Beth says, but you need to be soft with children, small ones. When they get a bit older, you get a bit firmer. Yeah, I think that's what we were saying.
Who's that chef? Is it Jamie Oliver? That one who's like really, really voss. And then Gordon Ramsay. And then when he's with his kids, he's like a whole different person. Like, okay, what you do is you crack the egg like this and you let it loose. But with adults, he's like, Mulele, that's you, bro.
Yeah, but that's right. I mean, with adults, you shouldn't have to be soft.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. If you, there's nothing actually sadder than like a weak, soft, pathetic adult who you can see has been raised like in cotton wool and has no idea of what the world's really all about. Sad. That's depressing. Makes me, you know, it's disappointing. That's the thing. It's when you see someone like that who's just got no, they've got no tenacity. They've got no strength of character because everything has just been easy for them. Horrible. It's even.
No cojones.
That's as bad as a psychopath.
It's so funny that you're putting it this way. So I was at a mentor's house on the weekend and he kind of mentored my old man. And we were just talking about some people I'm struggling with. And he said, I need to bring down the intensity. So what you're saying is so interesting to me because I don't know what to do with people that aren't intense. Like if you don't have passion, I don't know what to do. Like move, like for me, I just like to steamroll or get out of my way. But I was talking to Rena yesterday about it as well. It's like, sometimes I just get off the pedal and it's so interesting that you're saying, I don't know what to do with people where I got to be soft. Like,
well,
wake up.
I don't think it's too much to say, and I'll repeat what I said just a second ago. Those people who are really, really soft and have just got no backbone at all, and they just like jellyfish that, you know, are frightened of everything and life is tremendously intimidating and they can't really get their hardness or their strength from anywhere. They just don't have it in them. Those people to me are as bad as the psychopaths and the narcissists who you have to deal with by being as tough as them. I don't know what to do with those people either, Mbulelo. I kind of just, I just leave them alone. I can't work with them. I can't do anything with them. They don't add value to my life. They aren't even decorative because they don't have personality. It's the worst.
Just keep it moving. Keep it moving, Mbulelo. I've seen you in the office, you know, be passionate and confront some of these conversations. Dog, just keep it moving. If it's not going to add any value into your life and you can see what you're dealing with and it's not going to do anything for you, track 7, skip, next, go. Go on about your life.
Talking about psychopaths, listen to what Jenny says. Jenny says, my dad made me believe I was adopted. When I was naughty, he threatened me that he would take me back to the adoption house. Then I would tell the whole of them Schlangerocks that I was adopted. Yes, sus. That's heavy.
Hectic.
Yo, that's mean.
Carrot and stick. That's
horrible. Jenny's dad. very important.
Sorry, Jenny.
Very, very important. Apparently, Britney Spears got engaged. And I don't know if anybody saw the video.
Kevin Federline, round 2. What did Federline get from the first divorce?
Some children.
Because he got the bag.
Children. He also got custody because she's insane.
That was where boyfriend allowance really became a term. Like it started back there. Boyfriend allowance was a thing. Yeah. Now it's just like, it's so common.
So this guy apparently.
The hashtag, the Britney bag.
So this guy who she's engaged to now, and you can, if you can't tell from those videos that she put up on her social media that she's insane and that she needs a curator and why her poor father should not be lambasted the way that he has been on social media. Just watch her in these videos. She's totally insane. So she's marrying this dude now. She's engaged to a guy who was in her music video, the last music video she recorded.
Another one!
Yes!
Even Fjordline was popping and locking at the back there.
Exactly.
He was a backup dancer. She's correct. About that low-hanging fruit. I stand. Yeah, go, Britney. She doesn't need to go far to find love. The love comes and falls right into her lap. Go, girl.
Britney's the kind of girl who, if you just are around her long enough, eventually you'll end up married to her.
Yeah.
That's all.
She's pretty much.
Pop and lock in the back.
That's
pop,
all. Lock, so this guy was apparently her romantic interest in the last music video. And then, because she can't tell the difference between reality and acting or pretend, because she's still a Disney kid in her, you know, Mickey Mouse Club kid in her head, because Britney's never grown up. So she doesn't know that this is not reality. So in her head, she fell in love with him for real. And now she's actually going to marry this douchebag, and he's going to end up with a whole lot of her money. Watch. And because her father's not there to watch over the money, she's going to give him everything, and she's going to end up poor in a trailer back in Louisiana, where she came from. Watch.
Again, I forget. Like, her and Beyonce still shock me because, you know, they were such big stars. But every now and then I hear them talk, and she's so, like, you forget how country she is.
She's
like Beyonce,
heck.
Again.
Yeah,
like,
she's a proper hick.
Whenever Beyonce is, yeah, no, she's proper. And Beyonce, you know, I'm like, hey, not like that. You know what I mean? Like, I forget sometimes that these people, we are what we are. And so, Britney, you're, like you said, she's going to buy a mega trailer, isn't she? Now that her dad can't control the money.
Yeah,
she's going to buy a mega trailer with a above the ground jacuzzi and a laughter.
She was always a bit of a swamp hick, you know? I mean, this is like, no. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I used to, because Britney was this huge, big star when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I always thought, oh, what a beautiful girl. And she was in these very cute music videos where she looked amazing and she could dance and she could sing. And you were like, wow, this Britney's so talented. And then you kind of hear her speak and you suddenly realize.
Yeah, look, it seems like she's been with this guy for almost 5 years. So number one, shout out to him for playing the long game, because clearly he's just investing his time in, you know, what he believes is a whole bag. But I think we need to be a little bit sensitive, guys. Britney, from the jump, being a child star is like insane, especially in Hollywood. Like, the stuff that you learn from a young age, it's bizarre. She's never been a real human being functioning like a normal adult.
She's
bound to make these cool decisions.
She's 38 years old, and her father has had to step in and look after her money for the last 10 years or something. She's completely irresponsible. She gets married to any guy who's in her space for more than 5 minutes. She's had children that she's not even allowed custody of because she's so crazy. And she's now posting videos as this new dude who's in her life. I wish her luck. I really do. But I do think that trailer park in Louisiana is coming up faster in her front view than any of the good successes she's had in her rearview mirror. That's all I'm going to say. And I do want to throw in here, because we're talking about stupid Hollywood-type celebrity nonsense this morning, which we don't do often. We talked about Madonna earlier. We talked about the Met Gala. We're talking about Britney Spears now. So I've got to throw this in. It turns out, very, very important news. Dun, da, da, da. You need to quickly make a note of this, because it's something huge in everyone's life. Apparently, Kanye West has unfollowed Kim Kardashian on social media. Ooh, isn't that a bad sign?
What are we going to do?
What are we going to do?
Oh, no.
Are they still married?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Aren't they like on their way out? Like, they're still very close, but in terms of like the actual marriage thing?
You're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah.
I don't know any details. Yeah. That's all I know.
But who's the head witch there on the Kardashian side? What's her name? The mastermind of it all?
Kris Jenner.
She's already sorted out how much Kanye gets to get out the marriage. In fact, his bag's already packed. Yeah. She knows that lady's a mastermind, just a puppet master.
Yeah, she is. She's doing it. She
did a Madonna kind of shoot as well that came across on the gram for me. I'm like, ooh, okay, that's what we're doing now. Shout out to you, Kris Jenner.
Listen.
She scares me.
Power to her. I mean, imagine your husband decides that your marriage was a complete sham, and your husband decides he's actually a woman, and and you have to, how does your pride handle? There's no amount of psychotherapy you could put me in that would make it okay if I'd been with somebody, then they suddenly decide they're the opposite gender after years of marriage and kids. They've got, what, three, four kids together or whatever?
No, but Chris has been cooked. It's like, for her, it's just like, it's something else that she can put into the show and make money off of. Like, let's not forget, she's a smart, smart woman. Like, she packaged her kids into brands from the jump.
All of that, I give her full points for, but I'm saying somewhere deep inside, when she's on her own at night and she's lying in bed thinking about her life, there's got to be some part of her that hurts just a little bit, that there's this circus carnival going on around her, that she misread everybody and they misread her. Mm. And it's all just like this very commercial enterprise. There's some part of me that's like a little bit,
I don't know,
a little bit horrified by it's a real horror story. That family are a horror story. Gareth. She did sleep
with
OJ.
With OJ back in the first. So come on. She's part of the circus. I feel nothing for her. She is a puppet master and puppet at the same time.
Please. I don't think she cares. Like, she's too far gone. She might even be like close to soulless. She is so out of touch with, like, you know, feelings and stuff like that. She's just like, how much more money can I make? Whose life can I, you know, use right now? Like, just to get it back. It's too late for her.
I'd like to say how proud I am of all of us for the first time on this show, as far as I can recall, having spoken about anything serious with the Kardashians in it for months. I don't even think we've mentioned them for months. So well done. Lebang and Bulelo and I deserve some points for that. Don't say we don't cover some pop culture bullshit. We do.
Yeah, because if the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
Love it.
All right. So look at this book. This is there's a book called Go Play Inside, all right? And it's What Video Games Can Teach Us About the Game of Life. It's by a guy called Gareth Woods, who is a comedian. He's a writer. He is a business owner, a father, a husband, and he joins us today. Hey, Gareth, how are you doing, man?
Very well, thanks. How are you guys?
Good. Nice to see you. First of all, well done on the book.
Cheers. Thank you.
So what made you write this book? Are you one of those parents who just got sick of hearing other parents going, my kids spend so much time on screens, and I guarantee you it's just going to make them addled and stupid, and they're never going to get ahead in the world because these screens are just a big pox from hell, and the devil himself is in the screens. Is that the kind of thing that you were hearing?
Verbatim, actually, with the accent and everything. As a part of that, and I guess as an author yourself, I'm sure you've heard that, like, authors seem to feel like they've got this book inside them that somehow they just need to let out. And so I guess it was a mix of those two things. Wanting to get out this message about, I guess, games and the things they taught me. But at the same time, interacting with a lot of parents who kept going, you know, exactly that. I want to be the parent that my parents weren't for me. I want to support them in this thing that they enjoy doing, but is it real? You know, I don't want to be the parent that, you know, knocks down the door going, you're wasting your time with this rock and roll or this art or this whatever. Because my parents did that to me, and I'm an accountant when I could have been a rock star.
Yes. I don't blame you. That's a horrible reflection on life, is that you could have been a rock star, but you became an accountant. How depressing. So I hear you. All right. So Gareth, let's just start off with the idea behind this, because you're not just giving an opinion without substantiating it. And you are a gamer, so you spend a lot of time learning these skills yourself. And you reckon that there are things that we can learn from games: strategy, hand-eye coordination, basic skills, negotiating with other people, having to deal with an environment where there's constant change. Tell us about some of the main things you've picked up from gaming that you reckon kids could actually be, they could be improved thanks to.
Yeah, I think the ones you mentioned are kind of the ones that games have always marketed themselves with. Mm. I mean, I remember in the 80s and 90s, consoles being sold on, will help problem solving and hand-eye coordination, and basically any marketing puff they could put on a box to get parents to believe in this thing that at that stage was very new and very kind of like unknown. But I think, you know, of all the lessons in the book, the one that's kind of struck me the most recently has been the idea of control. So in the one chapter, it's called a controller for a reason. And I think especially during this kind of COVID and lockdown stage, when so much of what we have to go through is not under our control. I think it's a lesson that gaming has taught me frequently, which is that you're very aware when you play a game as to what is in your control and what isn't.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing, let's take Mario Brothers, for example. You control Mario. That's it. You can jump, you can duck, you can move left or right. Occasionally he gets a power up and changes some of his abilities, but that's it. You don't control the time, the gravity, the bad guys. That's it. And so it's been a weird, it's almost like the gamer's serenity prayer, as it were, going like, show me what's under my control and let me forget about everything that's not under my control. And I think that's been the premise of the book, is to go, how many of these lessons are we taught in gaming, but it's not on the box in terms of the cartridge or the console going, you will learn these things.
Yeah.
They're just these lessons that you pick up just by playing the game.
So just thinking about the control aspect of this, which I hadn't thought of this before, and it's great that you articulate it so beautifully, because kids, I think a lot of times they hear these vapid, vacuous people in the media saying to them, you can be anything, you can do anything, everything is within your control. Even their parents are probably telling them that. You know, it's all, there's your unlimited potential and there's nothing that you can't do, which is bullshit. So many kids are growing up these days thinking that is true, and then they hit the hard, cold world of reality and suddenly their whole picture of themselves falls apart, because they go, I thought I could control everything. Mom told me I was the best. Mom said to me I could play soccer at the highest level, but I can't even kick a ball straight because I'm squint. You know, these are the problems that I think a lot of kids grow up with, and games maybe teach them also that the world is not going to conform to your idea of how it should be. In other words, if you go online, particularly in online gaming, and you play against other people, they're going to behave like people in the real world behave. They're going to be dishonest. They're going to misrepresent themselves. They're going to lie to you. They're going to win you over and then betray you. These are things that people, if you learn them early on, they're less hurtful later on, and you know what to expect from people.
Yeah. It's also a safe environment, I think, or safer at least. You know, that's the thing with gaming, is it gives you an opportunity to just, for one, try things you would never try, repeat over and over and over and fail and fail and fail, but know that in a weird way, in a game, success is inevitable. You know, if I gave you the challenge of curing cancer, you know, you might not know how to do it, you might not even know if it's possible, but the fact that in a game, the obstacle that's put in front of you, you know, is possible, or, I mean, it'd be a really bad game if they designed it with an impossible kind of obstacle, like a boss you couldn't beat. It might be incredibly difficult, might take you hours to complete, but you keep trying and you try different things that you might not ever try in the real world, because you're going to manipulate the game rules in a way you can to eventually overcome that obstacle. But you know that obstacle can be defeated. It's almost got its own intrinsic motivation. You almost wish that in the world we knew that the obstacles that we had in front of us were built in to be able to be defeated. Because you'd have that confidence to just keep going at it until you eventually overcome.
How safe is the world of gaming for kids? Because there are obviously huge negatives here, and the parents who complain about this stuff have a very good case. I mean, they know, there are innumerable children who've been ruined by sitting in front of a screen all day, and they just have no personality, and all they can do is interact through a screen. Yeah. They don't have social skills. They don't have a personality necessarily. They don't know how to deal with real people in real environments. How safe is the gaming world? And we also know that there are creeps everywhere, and there must be a lot of creeps in the gaming world too. I don't know that if I had a kid, I don't know that I'd just let them loose for a couple of hours every day on the computer. You don't know what's going to happen to them. So when you say safe, what do you mean?
So for one, I mean, we've obviously got to separate the games themselves from the multiplayer experience, because it's the case of going like, would you say that rugby is safe? You go like, cool, it's a game, and if everyone plays by the rules, it is intrinsically safe. But there are some hooligans out there who are going to bite you at the bottom of the ruck. They're going to, you know, kick you and do all that sort of stuff. They're not playing in the rules. And in the same way, there's a multiplayer experience where you go, you're playing a game as innocuous as Fortnite. It's meant to be played by kind of young teens and whatever. But like, there are people who are going to, in voice chat, maybe saying some explicit things that aren't part of the game. So the rating experience changes, because it's not actually the game. It's the people you're involved with. So I just want to separate that part. And that's its own kind of like parenting minefield, is how your child interacts with other people. But I mean, that's been around since the days of chat rooms and any online experience. I think the game part for me is multiple facets. The one is obviously the age restrictions are there for a reason. I find it so weird that parents will be enforcing age restrictions on movies in terms of going, this is an R-rated movie, I will not let my 14-year-old watch it. But when it comes to games, they're playing GTA as a 10-year-old, they're playing all sorts of like adult content much younger, because in their mind, oh, it's a game. What did Pac-Man ever do to, you know, to corrupt our children? It's that kind of weird space of going, those ratings are there for a reason. The games have gotten the space of like as being as autistic and as thought-provoking as movies and music, but people are treating them in a weird way, like it's Pac-Man and Mario as a blanket statement for gaming, when there are lots of like very, very kind of like thought-provoking experiences that adults want. I'm not trying to get gaming to a stage where it's so censored that adults are precluded those experiences they want to be having, like interactive adult experiences, whatever. I don't mean adult only in the, like sexually explicit. I mean, just in terms of dealing with psychological thought-provoking kind of elements that kids shouldn't be involved in. But I think the key is how involved the parents are in the process. In the same way as you got these parents who go contraband everything and games are, you know, the sin, and that amazing accent you put on earlier about them being fearful of everything. You get the parents that aren't fearful enough. They just go, they just act like gaming is this all access, unfettered enjoyment for their kid to be using. And at the end of the day, gaming and screens and all of it is a tool. If you treat it as a tool that can bring your kid in immense entertainment and education and socialization, all that, in the right amount and in the right kind of like access control, it's the same as any tool. I mean, food, for example. You don't let your kid have unfettered access to the food that they want.
Oh, that's not true, Gareth. A lot of parents do. You clearly haven't walked around a mall lately. Lots of times.
I spend time in Disneyland with more rascal scooters, disability scooters, than you've seen in your life. So Jesus. I know exactly what you're talking about in terms of, you know, unfettered access to sweets and all that stuff. I guess I'm being a bit normative and going like, kind of access.
Don't make excuses. You're right. Go, Lebang.
But yeah, what Gareth is saying is it's actually taking me aback a little bit, because what we sometimes do as parents is just sort of grab the game, give it to the kid and say, run along, do your thing. You know, you don't really get as involved. So I started playing a game with my kids. It's a game called Journey. It's just about like a little character moving around. I love that game. And since we started playing Journey together, now I can sort of trust that, you know, when he plays the game, I can trust whatever he does. But, and luckily, it's just not that kind of game. But I guess what I'm trying to say is when you actually sit and play the game with your kid, it's a lot different to just sort of like letting them go out into the world. You can be exposed to some of those creeps on the internet. You can be exposed to some. So I'm still figuring out the mind, is it mind blocks or roadblocks? I'm still figuring all of that out because it is messy. It's the big internet. You don't know who is who. It's an 11-year-old girl dressed up on the internet, but behind is this 50-year-old man living in his mother's basement across the globe. So I think, number one, getting involved as a parent makes the biggest difference. It really does. There's a little bit that you can control. You can't control all of it. I promise you can't. And to the point of having, you know, age restrictions and blah, blah, blah. Again, Gareth, like, how much of that can you really control? If the game says, you know, no under 18s, your child can find a way to play that game whether you want to or not. So I just think being able to sit with your kid and getting a little bit of like understanding of what this game is about really can sort of help in the long run.
I'll use an anecdotal example. I was playing a game with my kid. He's 5 years old. The age restriction was, I think, 10. And from a gameplay perspective, it was pretty innocuous. It's platforming gaming, so your character's jumping around doing whatever. Then the story took a kind of dark turn where the characters are these kind of like toys, but they're representing an adult couple who are getting divorced. And as a five-year-old, not being able to really grapple with that concept. And so it was a chance for me to almost have this like gifted to me teaching moment of being able to like talk to my kid about like what divorce means and what does it mean if a mom and dad don't live together anymore. And so it's like, it's almost like giving you these really great parenting opportunities. And I mean, he's five. If this continues our relationship, that we can play games into his teenage years, it's being able almost to like, me and my wife have this thing about, do you strengthen your kid or do you protect your kid? Because they're two different things. I was hearing some of the chat you guys were having earlier in terms of like kids who haven't been, who've been protected only and never been strengthened. Sometimes you do have to protect your kids. I mean, you make your choice as a parent. Let's take something like drugs. you might protect your kid and avoid them having any access to this sort of stuff as much as you can. And they're going to find about it one day, and you hope that they're strong enough adults to be able to make decisions themselves. Or you strengthen them to teach them about this stuff. Mm. I'm not saying you go out and buy cocaine and you share it with them, but you like you tell them about it, you let them know what it does, and you kind of explain all that stuff so that they feel empowered that they know about the stuff enough to make the decision. And yes. I think gaming allows you to almost have those opportunities where I often sit and we're playing together and I watch him. And I watch him make decisions, and they might not be the decisions I make. I try not to judge them, but we can chat about it afterwards. But it doesn't feel like he's got his dad censoring every decision that he has to make while playing the game.
So it allows them to develop a little bit of agency early on. So let me ask you this, Gareth. The real question most parents are faced with, and frankly, the whole of society is going to be faced with, I don't know if you saw that China has just limited the amount of time that kids are allowed to spend in front of screens. And you know, when China makes a decision like that, people follow or they get killed. So this is kind of, it's not negotiable in a place like China. So kids, I think it's an hour a day they've been limited to in front of...
On the weekends, I think Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 1 hour a day.
Correct.
And 18th.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think that this is probably a really positive thing for China, as if they don't already have the advantage of, you know, much better schools, much less kind of indoctrination through nonsense liberal arts kind of ideas. The Chinese may just be giving themselves another leg up here because they won't be putting their kids in front of a screen for that long. Whereas in the West, the screen does become a computer. The screen does become outsourced parent to so many. So what is the right amount of time that you think a kid should be spending in front of a computer screen? And what kind of time should parents be looking at, roughly? There's no easy answer to this, but go ahead.
No, there isn't. Thanks for teeing it up as no easy answer. But I think the Chinese have had a history of sweeping changes when they want to deal with something nuanced. You know, you think of the single child policy. It's like population control is a nuanced topic. And to just sweepingly go, you can have one child, you know, you talk about... indoctrination from the liberal side. I mean, this is very much government indoctrination. Yeah, telling
absolutely.
You this is how society should be.
Right.
And so in the same way as the gaming thing, like going 1 hour a day is how they're prescribing is what 18 should do. It's going to have other sweeping changes. For one, I think you're going to see a lot of kids who are just going to work a way around it. I've been following the article quite closely, and already there's all sorts of like ID fraud and all sorts of like VPN stuff where guys are like logging in from overseas VPNs. So, I mean, they're finding a way around it. The other thing is, I mean, just from a money point of view, China has some of the biggest esports teams in the world, you know, worth millions and millions of dollars. And they're already looking to kind of like leave where their HQ is and go elsewhere. So it's going to have a financial impact there as well. So, I mean, I think it's a bit of an unnuanced approach to a very nuanced issue. To jump onto the question of like how much screen time is enough, I think it comes down to the child. I know it's a bit of a political answer. You know, some kids are more inclined to be outdoorsy, some more inclined to be screen types. Does depend on your affinity to that sort of stuff. If I use my own example, my kid gets 1 hour of screen time a day, but we try and encourage him to choose gaming over TV. Because it's less of a passive pursuit. You know, him playing a video game for an hour is, I feel, far more valuable than him passively sitting watching Peppa Pig or whatever for an hour. It's just kind of like forcing a message on him. It's far more, like you said, agency. There's far more problem solving. And the only rule we kind of have is that whatever game he chooses, that's the game for the hour.
Right.
So it's not this like pick and choose Netflix TV sort of thing where you go, I'll watch 5 minutes of this. Oh, the story's getting a little bit act two and a bit, I don't want to be here. So then I'm just going to pivot and go to the next show. No, you stick to what you've chosen. So, because I don't want the kid as well that goes, play stage one, gets through it, gets to stage two. Ooh, this is hard. Play the stage one of the next game. No, you chose this game. The game is going to get harder because you are getting more skillful.
I heard the most terrifying thing yesterday. Apparently, the average American adult spends 100 days of their lives just deciding what to watch.
Sure. Mm.
100 days of their lives just going with the remote, trying to decide what to watch or going through YouTube videos or whatever. That's a
it's a real thing.
Time. That's ridiculous. That is a complete. When you get to the pearly gates one day and you've lived a life, and someone says to you, "What's your biggest regret?" I'll guarantee you, there's not going to be anyone who's going to go, "No, those 100 days I spent just trying to find the right thing to watch, those were well spent." Nonsense.
Yeah, it's a real thing, Gareth. I say it all the time with Mike, and sorry, Mulelo, my 7-year-old, like when he's on my phone, if a stage gets too hard in a game, he'll just literally stop playing and download another game. I've had to ban him from downloading games because it's getting that absurd. And I worry because my 2-year-old has this thing where she'll take my phone and she's on YouTube, the shorts, the stories or whatever. I told you guys about it last week. She just does this. She's not even sitting through the full minute anymore. She's just going up.
Yeah. It's training them in a way that, like, I mean, I catch myself as well when you just doom scroll Twitter and you just go, "I've got these alerts to tell me how long you've been kind of like on an app," and you just go, "Oh damn, that was 20 minutes. I just didn't do anything."
Yeah.
And it's different from like, I'm not trying to say that like wasting your time is not a waste of, you know, it's not a good use of time. Sometimes we need to clutch out and just like play a game for half an hour, watch a TV show, but you've decided to do that thing. Or what I'm kind of against is the doom scrolling aspect, is where you just go, "Oh my word, I just wasted half an hour not doing half an hour of something. I just let time pass." It's different if you went, I don't think anyone does this, "I'm going to spend half an hour just going through social media." No one does that. You kind of check in for a little dopamine hit or a little like snack, and then an hour passes. Whereas if you went, "I'm going to spend my coffee break or whatever playing a game," or "I'm going to spend my break watching a show," at least it feels like that's what you wanted to do with your time, not that your time was just extracted from you like some sort of like siphon. Yeah. Which is what social media feels like sometimes.
Yeah, I think social media would be much bigger waste of time than a game. I mean, I agree with you. There's an interactive part of this. But there are some games that are also really, really smart and strategic and brilliant and will teach your kids incredible things. Before, what's the reaction to your book been? Have people mostly said, "Ah, oh, this is nonsense," or "Ah, oh, we agree with you," or is it half and half?
No, it's actually been tremendously positive. I had to lower my expectations at first. Like, I mean, you write a book and then you realize about the technicalities of writing a book. It's not just the writing, it's the afterwards of the publishing and the press and all that sort of stuff. So kind of lowered my expectations in terms of like having to go through that birth canal. But generally the response has been excellent. I think especially from non-gamers. I think I wrote this book as a gamer, but trying to address non-gamers. And so that's been the hard part for me because I've been a gamer for far longer than I haven't been one. And so it's been great to hear non-gamers, even if they just have that kind of aha moment to go like, cool, it's not a waste of time, but it's not also all sunshine and roses. It's not like, cool, I'm just going to have my kid have a deluge of games and just play nonstop, and one day you'll be an esports professional, it'll all be worth it. There's also on me as the parent to go like, hey, if you want to get engaged in this space, here's some insights I've kind of garnered through the years of playing games and trying to help you understand the space.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the work is still up to the parent. I mean, I always think of an insight my dad gave me where he said that your kid will give you very few chances, invitations into their world. Like in terms of going, "Hey, Dad, this is my favorite band, come listen." Or like, "Hey, I love this show, come watch." And if you judge those opportunities, "Oh, this is bloody rubbish. Why aren't you doing your homework?" Or, "Oh, what the hell is this art? It looks crap." Then those opportunities to be invited are going to shrink very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And then teleport 10 years from now and you go, "My kid's on drugs. Why didn't he come talk to me? Oh, my kid got someone pregnant. Why didn't he come talk to me?"
Yeah.
Well, because you didn't even want to look at his art. Like, why would he want to talk to you about the problems he's having with like bullies or drugs or whatever, when you can't even like accept something as basic as the game he likes. And so it's the invitation really for parents to go like, this world of gaming, it's not even is the future, is the present. The idea that gamers, all these 14-year-old nerds, 40-year-old virgins in the making, those are still gamers, but that's not an exclusive club anymore. Everybody games these days.
I mean, I know some. You know, I know a parent. He's a good friend of mine. He's a gamer, and he is, at the same time as being a bit of a gamer and a bit of a nutcase, he's also a really good father. You You know, these things are not mutually exclusive. You can either be one or the other. But I do want to go to Neil's question here. He says, my son always wants to give up when the game gets too difficult, or he asks me to take over. Either you practice and get better, or you go outside and you play. So he's finished that hard stage, and he loves it. I think that's a good point.
It's tough. I've had plenty of times when it's absolute tears. My kid is just like not digging this game because it's gotten too hard. And it is difficult, especially when we're playing games where I think his ability in gaming is far out, more developed than his maturity. So it's the case of going, he's doing really difficult stuff, but he's on the razor's edge in terms of his temperament, in terms of too many losses in a row, and he can't, it kind of like rattles him a bit.
Yeah.
And one thing I've found that helps is like, what we'll do is like, I will do the bit that he can't do for him, but then we will reload that point and he'll go and do it himself. Because sometimes it's just being shown that it can be done.
Yes.
In the same way, it's like when I've been stuck in a game, like I'll often go on a YouTube tutorial to see, oh, that's how it's done. I still have to do it. I still have to do the jump and I still have to beat the boss, but I know like, oh, okay, that's how you do it. Because I'm absolutely stuck as to how to do it. And I came from the generation where you didn't have the internet. So you would just be stuck until someone on the playground knew how to do it. And then everyone would run home and try and do it for themselves because there was no internet to, you know, share notes on. But sometimes it helps just to see someone able to achieve it. And I think that's why like Twitch and YouTube and all those videos are so popular, because guys can see how the professionals kind of do things.
Yeah.
Congrats on the book. I mean, you know, this is a really welcome addition to what is otherwise just, oh, games are bad news. They're terrible and kids shouldn't play them and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you've got to hear the other side of the argument, because there are probably a lot of things that we can all benefit from. Technology in every other aspect of our lives has helped us and, of course, in some ways hindered us. So everything's about the balance. But if you want to read the book, it's Gareth Wood's book. It's called Go and Play Inside: What Video Games Can Teach Us About the Game of Life. And thank you very much. There have been lots of comments here from people who think that you're a complete lunatic. Robin,
it's the toys.
Robin says, I can't believe what I'm hearing. She's been very angry through all of this. And then other people are saying, well, you know what? You're spot on. And frankly, life is just a big simulation. So we may as well learn these lessons through games. Gareth, well done. Congrats on the book. We'll speak to you soon.
Brilliant. Thanks for your time.
Cool. Bye. And thank you, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers. CliffCentral.com.